everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 278. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And, of course, go to the Facebook. Like us there, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun show for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. Marco Elias is a Washington State Senator representing the 21st District. He previously spent 6 years as a member of the Washington House of Representatives. He is up for re-election, and we like him a lot, which I think has got to be worth at least a few thousand votes right there, making his triumphant fourth appearance on our show. Marco, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
It's so awesome. 278 shows.
I know. I know. And you've been on four of them, which represents a chunk.
Yeah, that's right. That's like 2%.
Well, we want you to get a ton of percentages because you are running yet again for the Washington State Senate. Well, this is really your first time running for the State Senate, correct?
It is. Yeah, I was appointed to the seat in January, so it's my first election, but the joy of the Washington State Senate is it's a four-year term as opposed to a two-year term in the House, so I'll have a little bit more time to focus on my work and other stuff. I won't have to be running every other year moving forward.
Okay. Well, let's do Civics 101 lesson. So aside from the term differentials, how would you describe the difference between a state representative and a state senator there in the lovely state of Washington?
So in Washington, we have twice as many representatives as we have senators. So
okay.
98 in the House and 49 in the Senate. So I would say the biggest difference is it's just a smaller group of people, has a more intimate feel. You have much more opportunity to work with each of your colleagues. You know, in the House, there were a few folks that I just never really had a chance to work with.
Yeah.
We didn't serve on the same committees. We just didn't cross paths in the Senate. Really, I've had a chance to work with almost everyone in just, you know, one session down there. The other piece is, you know, just like the U.S. Senate confirms members of the president's cabinet, in the state Senate, we confirm members of the governor's cabinet. So it's one additional little piece of authority that we have. So that means we're dealing with a few more questions, a few more issues than I did in the House.
Okay. So talk to me about your transition from the House to the Senate. So as I understand it, in January, Paul Shin, who has since endorsed you, we like him a lot and we wish him good health.
Absolutely.
He had to step down. You then took his place after a nominating process, and everyone said, yes, of course we want Marco Elias. What was your learning curve like moving from the House to the Senate?
Well, you know, I was actually initially appointed to the House, too, in 2008. And I would say, comparing the learning curves, I felt way, way better about this transition. You know, the issues that the legislature deals with are ones that I've worked on. So it was more about learning the personalities and learning some of the unique processes in the Senate, which was helpful. So we were talking about transportation, we're talking about education. I was familiar with those issues. It was more about, you know, how does the process and the institution feel? So that was helpful. And, you know, certainly my colleagues really embraced me and wanted to make sure that there was a couple of us that came in by appointment in midterm. The mayor of Seattle, for example, was a state senator before he stepped down. So his replacement came. So there's a few of us that were new, and just the institution really embraced us and wanted to make sure we were successful and that we had ways to contribute, which was really awesome.
Nice. How many out gay senators are there?
There's two of us. So the fellow I just referenced, Jamie Peterson, took our new mayor of Seattle seat in the Senate. And so Jamie and I are both openly LGBT. And actually the mayor of Seattle, Ed Murray, was our only LGBT senator for a few years. So it's great that we've doubled the representation there. And it looks like depending on election results, we may end up with the largest LGBT caucus we've had in state history with a couple of great LGBT candidates running for the House. So we may end up with, I think the total count would be 7 or 8 by the end of the day. So that could be really exciting.
Now, when you took office there in the state Senate, did your former House colleagues shun you? Because I have a feeling that it's like a Sharks and a Jets kind of thing, and they just they don't acknowledge you anymore.
Actually, it was really awesome. A couple of them came to the swearing-in, and we had a little celebration later that night at one of my favorite restaurants in Olympia. And you know, our state Senate in Washington has been a little mired in sort of some partisan wrangling
and
trouble. So I think my colleagues in the House were excited to have a friend over in the Senate that would help you know, shepherd their bills and fight for the issues that we all care about. So they seem pretty excited.
Okay.
Although it has been, you know, despite the fact that the chambers are on other opposite sides of the same building, the one thing I did notice was just how much less contact I had. Even though we were just across the building, you just get so mired down in your day to day that you forget just across the building there's your friends.
Yeah.
So I do wish I'd seen them more, but you know, we were all working hard to do this. This year was a 60-day session, so we only had 2 months to get a whole bunch of stuff done, and so we're all just working our tails off in our respective corners to try and get things done.
Did your parking spot get better?
You know, it didn't actually.
What?
I would say middle in terms of seniority. And
oh.
So I also had done a good job of working the system and got the folks that assigned parking spots to be on their good side. So I had a good parking spot in the house, and you know, my parking spot in the Senate's fine, but it's a little bit further out as the 49th senator of 49 in seniority. So.
Oh, you're the newbie.
I am the newbie.
All right. So now you're running. First, in a general sense, do you feel a difference in running for state senate as opposed to running for the House? Obviously, we're talking about, I would assume, very different size audiences.
You know, actually, the district is the exact same, which
okay.
is nice. So our district elects two representatives and one senator. And so it's the same communities that I've represented, which is great. I haven't had to sort of get out there and learn issues in new areas.
You know these people.
Awesome in that respect. Exactly. I do notice, you know, I think it's just the title is different. So I think people take that a little bit more seriously, even though the responsibilities are the same. When you say you're a senator, I think everybody sort of knows that that's something that must be important.
Right.
When you say you're a representative, it's not as clear, like, you know, for Amway or for the state, like, what are you a representative for?
Right.
And so in that respect, it's been a little different. And then, like I said, our state Senate is pretty evenly divided, and the Republicans actually have a very narrow majority in our state Senate, which Washington's a pretty Democratic state.
Yeah.
So across the state, there's been a lot of focus on trying to make sure we elect a Democratic majority. And so being sort of part of that group that's up for election this year, there's a lot of support and a lot of resources and a great team spirit as we try and take back the majority for the Democrats in the state Senate.
Nice. Now, look, I'm kind of a politico. I love studying my politics. I loved running for office in Vermont. It's a huge part of my life. I'm excited to do it here in Ohio. And I'm always curious about this for people who are running for election. How would you characterize, how much are you running yourself to get elected, and to what degree do you feel like you are running against someone else?
You know, as the incumbent, I definitely feel like, you know, the ball's more in my court. And I've noticed my opponent kind of framing his campaign, you know, in an attempt to criticize my record and criticize, you know, me as a person. And so it definitely feels more like, you know, my name and my reputation are on the line and they're coming after me, which I think would be different if we're an open seat or if you're running for local office where people don't know either of the candidates very well. But I definitely feel like, you know, the issues we're running on and the subject of the campaign is a lot a reflection, not just of my 1 year in the Senate, but also of my time in the House. And my opponent really has some different opinions on the way that our state should be going and has really focused on some of the contrast between us. So, yeah, I feel more like he's running against me than I'm running against him.
We have to just touch on this quickly because I don't know. It's 2014, so in some ways it kind of floors me that we still do things like this. But your race there, not absent of personal attacks.
Sadly, no. No, it's true. In the recession, my family, we had a small business that didn't make it. It was a small construction company, and with the housing market collapse, you know, we weren't able to keep our tiny little boat afloat. And so that's been kind of a perennial subject of attacks. People love to criticize it because, you know, definitely anytime you lose a business, anytime you have to go through bankruptcy, it's not a fun process. And so that's been kind of the sharpest point of attacks. But then just in addition to that, you know, really just kind of mean-spirited, trying to really focus on the personality rather than I think, you know, the way I approach a campaign is there's so many issues that I disagree with my Republican opponent on that we could spend time talking about taxes,
right,
talking about how we're going to fund education. And we have wildly different opinions there that, you know, I really wish we could stick to that and not have to talk about, because he wasn't there in 2007 when we were trying to you know, bail water out of our sinking little ship and trying to get folks to buy houses while they were losing their jobs. And so to try and relitigate that and to try and second guess the decisions that we made as a family, you know, that's the part that kind of bugs me.
Yeah.
If he'd been there, you know, I think that maybe he'd have some standing to judge, but he wasn't there and he doesn't know what we went through. And I'd rather talk about how we're going to take care of the kids of our state, how we're going to invest in a transportation system
right.
that works for all of us and not relitigate, you know, stuff that happened, you know, 8 years ago that was unfortunate. And I've tried to really build from there.
Do you want me to call him and say something?
I don't think that would be helpful.
Okay.
But, you know, you're always welcome to.
Okay.
You do have such a powerful voice of persuasion that maybe you could convince them.
I love it. Let's talk about you. You've been in public life for so many years at this point. What would you say that you have learned about yourself and the way that you interact with people?
You know, I think the piece that really keeps me motivated to keep going is the ability to hear the stories of the people that I represent and then take those stories with me and share them with other people. We had a really emotional debate in the Senate around a piece of legislation that would prevent certain folks from buying guns or possessing guns based on domestic violence convictions. And it was a bill that seemed really common sense on the face. You know, of course, people that are, you know, domestic violence abusers shouldn't have guns. But, you know, the NRA is a powerful force and they kind of took some time to figure out what their position was on it and eventually were neutral on the bill. And so I was able to tell the story of one of my constituents on the Senate floor and her experiences. Her mother had been shot by her then stepfather and survived, but talked about, you know, how terrorizing it was to know that there was this person out there that had access to weapons, that wanted, had already tried to harm her mother and what would happen. And telling that story and sharing her, you know, hopes and dreams and her concerns and her fears was really powerful. That's what I love about my job. I get to meet people that are doing amazing things, that are experiencing life in different ways than me. And as opposed to, you know, other people in life where you just say, wow, that was interesting. I get to take all those experiences with me and then say, hey, these are the people I've met. These are the things they're going through. Let's do something to help people like them. And I really enjoy that about the ability to be a representative or be a senator. I think it's about taking the voices of everyday people and making sure that in the halls of power that those voices of everyday people are there too.
Nice, nice. Well, when you were last on the show, which by the way is almost 2 years ago at this point, but I won't rag you for that. We talked about Washington State, one of the great states for our LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. What do we have left to work on there in Washington State to make it even better?
Well, the thing that I'm most passionate about right now and trying to work hard on is to ban reparative therapy.
Yeah,
or
I mean, come on.
Therapy.
Yeah.
Exactly. The official term for it is sexual orientation change efforts, but, you know, that's not what the proponents of it call it. And we actually had legislation. I introduced a bill just before I left the House in the week that I was there, and we actually got that bill out of the House with like a 94-4 vote, and then our Senate Republicans killed it. And so I'm going to keep working on it. And it really, really disappointed me that we got such a strong bipartisan vote from one chamber, and then, you know, the Republicans in the Senate couldn't learn from the Republicans in the House that had supported it so overwhelmingly, and we couldn't get it there. The other thing that I'm really passionate about is making sure that our transgendered Washingtonians get health care parity, equal access to health care, and we've had some really great developments in that regard with a couple of our big plans offering benefits, our insurance commissioner coming out with some really clear guidance to our health insurers that they need to provide parity. And so making sure that we're providing for, you know, we've got some equal treatment under the law in terms of marriage and in terms of relationship recognition. Now we need to work on the fact that LGBT families are more likely to live in poverty, more likely to struggle with housing as LGBT couples or LGBT people age. There aren't yet enough LGBT-friendly housing options for seniors. So now we've got to start working on some of these other important issues. And that's what I'm passionate about moving forward.
Nice, nice. Sing the praises for our listening audience of the 21st District there in the Evergreen State.
Well, you know, it is hands down the most beautiful district. It borders Puget Sound, which is our beautiful body of water, and from most parts of the 21st District, you can catch a glimpse of either the Cascade Mountains or the Olympic Mountains, or both. And so We've got beautiful views of the water, some wonderful historic downtown communities on the water, Mukilteo and Edmonds, and then just some really exciting, innovative people. We've got this brand new energy storage technology company that's creating giant batteries the size of shipping containers to help us power our renewable energy systems and move past coal and other dirty sources of energy. So we've got smart, innovative people that live in a beautiful place. And I'm pretty lucky that I grew up here and I get to represent the communities that I've known and loved for, you know, basically my whole life. So it's nice. A pretty awesome opportunity.
Nice. You know, look, we are a national show. Folks are listening to us all over the country and some all over the world. Why should folks go on over to MarcoForSenate.com and give even $3 or $4, which of course you will take? I want us to break down this idea that we shouldn't be interested in state politics in other states.
Well, I think if there's any lesson, LGBT people have seen it in the last 12 or 18 months, that when a few states take a leadership role on our rights and our freedoms, it becomes a national movement. We've seen that Washington was the first state to pass marriage equality at the ballot box. And it has, you know, we can't take credit for the whole marriage equality movement, but certainly it came at a watershed moment. And I think this movement to ban conversion therapy is one of those next big issues. California and New Jersey have banned it. I think we need to start a nationwide conversation about how we treat young people that are LGBT and that it's not a disease. It's not something that needs to be fixed. It's part of who they are. And if we can get more states to take action on this, it's going to create a nationwide movement. And as folks in the international community see, when countries like the United States speak loudly and proudly about equality and freedom for our LGBT people, whether it's young people or people that want to get married or seniors, the sounds of our announcements really, really make waves across the world. And so, you know, you have to start small. You have to start in places where we can make progress. So that's my pitch, is wherever you live, we want to be supporting folks that are taking care of LGBT kids, that are making sure that all of us have freedoms and opportunities in this country. And if we can do it in Washington, then we can spread the word across the country.
Nice. Well said. Well said. Well, most importantly and most seriously, listen, this guy dumped me this summer and moved to Seattle. If elected, what is it that you can do to help me make his life more miserable?
That is, you know, I think that we certainly could. I know the mayor of Seattle pretty well.
So good.
We could take a look at, you know, his utility bills. Maybe are there any fences in the wrong location? You know, we could really go after this guy. I was also sorely disappointed to read about your date with the fellow that was like too busy staring at his car and not staring at the wonderful, amazing person across from him. So, you know, I'm on board with this. I think we've got to take this seriously. And Mike, one caveat is I too am single, so I need some solidarity from you too.
I am so there for you, man. I am so there for you. I'm confused as to why this issue is not represented on the issues tab there at Marco for Senate. It's just, it might be an update.
It could have been an oversight.
Something to work on. You know, look, the one thing I worry about you is that, and I will tell you to your face, and by that I mean over the phone from many thousands of miles away, is that you've been doing this for so long, which is so fantastic, and you're so great at it, that my hope is that you constantly are remembering what a huge deal it is to have you as an out politician, to have you as a representative in the Evergreen State, but one who has this national recognition. I do follow your campaigns. I follow everything that you do, and you are so inspiring. And I hope you know that, yes, are you doing amazing work? Without question. But even that part that I don't want to gloss over of you being an out politician inspires people in ways that I bet you don't always get feedback on, and you inspire me a ton, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I didn't get involved in politics to be an LGBT leader. It wasn't what motivated me to get involved. But now that I do have the microphone, I want to use that opportunity to make sure there's a lot of kids out there that don't have role models, don't have people that they think are standing up for kids like them. And, you know, I said to myself early on that this isn't an issue that I'm like super comfortable or excited to talk about when I first got in office. But if using my voice means that we can make it a safer, more tolerant, compassionate place for those kids that are growing up, then, you know, that's my moral responsibility, my obligation. So that's what motivates me. I mean, I love standing up for our community. But I know that when there's folks like me in positions with fancy titles that say things to kids and families that this is okay. You can be who you want to be. You can love who you want to love. And we're going to have a state and a society that embrace you. That's why I do it. You know, we need a place that everyone feels welcome, where everyone feels like they're a part of what's going on.
Love it. Mark Elias is a Washington State Senator representing the 21st District. He is running for re-election, and you should go learn more about him and help him out, because he'll take help from all over this country, because that's how inspiring he is. Just go to MarcoForSenate.com. That's MarkoForSenate.com. Marco, we will be watching your race and celebrating with you when you are re-elected.
Thanks so much, Ken, and I look forward to being on show 500.
Can I just get to 280, Marco? Just leave it be.
Okay, fine.
Alright, folks, and we are back with our next amazing guest. Alice Durock is the CEO and one of the creators of Wet for Her, an award-winning lesbian-owned and operated brand that was founded with the intention of providing adult novelties specifically crafted and packaged for lesbian consumers. At its very core, Wet for Her symbolizes love, celebrating lesbian lovemaking with tools of love from the land of love, calling all the way from France, our first ever French caller. Alice, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much, Ken. Thank you.
Bienvenue.
Merci beaucoup.
That's all I got, Alice. That's as far as we can get with the French.
That's perfect.
How are things over there in the land of love?
Everything is perfect. Everything is fine.
Fantastic. Well, we have so much to talk about. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, obviously, this is a very specific brand that you've created, and I would love to talk about your background. We don't get the chance to talk very sex positively all that much on various different media. Was talking positively about sex a part of your growing up experience?
I was before in the hotel industry, in the luxury industry in hotels.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to be an entrepreneur always, and as being a lesbian, I wanted to do something for my community, in fact.
Yeah.
So I thought that sex would be great.
I think it is great. So I don't even know, Alice, how you go about creating new products. Did you survey people? How did you put this all together?
We have like about 10 couples that are testers for her.
Okay.
And so we have a lot of feedback from sex toys that we try, and they come back to us and saying, hey, that would be terrific if I could do this, or I would like to feel this sensation when with my girlfriend I do this in bed, etc. And then we work with our designer in improving sex toys, in fact, for the lesbians.
Gotcha. Well, I want to go through. I was searching around on your website, and I saw some of your mission statements, and I think they're just so brilliant. So I want to go through some of them, and it's so important that we talk about them. Number one, we believe in couples' longevity through a healthy sexuality. It's up to everyone and to every couple to find a sexual harmony with or without toys. Talk to us about healthy sexuality.
I think love and sexuality cannot be dissociated. If you don't make any more love to your girlfriend, at one point you will be her best friend, but not anymore her lover. So the foundation of a couple, I think it's sex, and you need not to fall in routine in bed.
Yeah.
That's the thing, in fact. As soon as you fall in routine, then I will say you're not anymore excited.
Yeah.
And then women need, you know, to feel excited and to be, you know, pleased and everything. So I think the clue of a couple is to have something happening in bed. And it can be with or without sex toys, in fact. If you make love every day or every week with a sex toys, you are falling also in routine. So you need to either do something else different each time.
Can I pause for a second? You must know that saying the phrase making love with a French accent is just much different than an American accent. It just sounds better, Alice. You must know that. Yeah. Okay, number two. We believe that our sexuality deserves the creation and development of products specifically designed for us and in accordance with our lifestyle. I would imagine, Alice, our listeners are thinking, I don't even understand what it means to have a lesbian-specific brand of adult novelties.
Okay, so when we created Wit for Her, we wanted to, in fact, with my girlfriend at the moment, 4 years ago, we wanted to buy a sex toy, and the only thing we found in shops and on the website was realistic sex toys. And the thing about Wet for Her is not about replacing something we don't have, but it's about having something that enhances our pleasure, in fact.
There you go.
So it's just another vision about sex toys. We don't want to be a man. We just want to please our partner, in fact.
There you go. There you go. Number three, we believe in the quality of our products. Our products are designed and manufactured with the best materials so it can last over time and bring you comfort. Talk to me about how important the quality of your products are.
Sure. So what is happening mostly worldwide is the sex toys are not regulated in the countries.
Okay.
And in the U.S., it's not regulated by the FDA. So that means that you can manufacture sex toys with whatever materials you want. So it can be really cheap plastic.
Mm.
And this has like phthalates in it and it stink and it's really like poor materials and you can buy it $10. And otherwise you can have high quality and sex toys with only 100% silicone like we do at Wet for Her. And those will last in time. They have a soft touch and they're non-porous. So they're good quality.
Gotcha. And finally, we believe that our customer satisfaction is essential. Now, as a business owner, I think we all know, we should keep our customers satisfied. What's your way of doing that? Because I would imagine that's pretty big, keeping your customers satisfied.
I think keeping your customers satisfied is about innovating. And also, it's about providing a good service to the customer. So meaning that, for example, we know that on a website it's very hard to see the size of a sex toy or to choose the good size for your harness. So what we do at Wet for Her, if you bought the wrong harness size, we just change it for free. And if the sex toy was not the good size, we do 50% on the second sex toy you want to buy.
There you go.
So the girls feel really comfortable about buying.
Nice. Now, from what I understand, and I hear this is a bit of an understatement, Alice, this is a male-dominated industry, is it not?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So what is it like being a woman making your mark in this male-dominated industry?
The men have been really curious, and they support Wet for Her really well.
Nice.
And they are fan about Wet for Her. They love it.
I love it.
They're really nice guys, and they've done a lot for me.
Now, I did not know this. I made a joke earlier about how everything sounds better with a French accent, which is just fact, Alice. It's just true, and you know it. But from what I understand, the Americans, despite calling France the language of love, Americans seem to be more into purchasing your products than the French.
Yes, they're much more. Yes, that surprised me at the beginning because before I was not in the adult industry, so I heard about, you know, French lovers are the best and et cetera. But then when I opened the company in the U.S. and I see how the girls were with sex toys and buying and doing things, I was just like amazed. And I was just like, okay, so French talks a lot, but not do that much. When Americans, you know, don't talk that much about sex, but do a lot. So I was really, really happy and it was quite funny about this.
Now, when you are out and about in the cafes and you are meeting new people and quite naturally people ask each other, what do you do? Do people ever, I would imagine you get a range of reactions when you describe what it is that you do.
Yeah, I think the reaction is they never thought that was my business, in fact. When they say, so what do you do, Alice, in living, you know, I say, well, I do sex toys. And they're just like, you know, 5 seconds, nobody is speaking. Just like, okay. So that's funny. That's really, really funny.
And what about your family? How supportive has your family been of what it is that you do?
They are fabulous about it. They really support what I'm doing, and they love the idea also. And, they support a lot. That's really great.
Okay. I love this. Now, give us some advice. I love giving advice to our listeners. So if you are looking to make your relationship even more healthy than it is, and you're thinking, you know what, Alice sounds great, and I love the quality of her products, I'm going to stroll on over to wetforher.us. What advice would you give them as they stroll around your website?
First, what is important is about your girl. What does she want to receive? That's the most important. So you need to talk and have a good communication with your girlfriend for that.
Communication is big.
Yes, communication is big in any couple and everywhere, I think.
Okay. This is so exciting, Alice. I thought I was going to be blushing this whole interview. I get nervous because I think in the media a lot, Alice, we hesitate to talk about sex. Because some people associate it with, oh, well, this should be, you know, behind closed doors. But if we're going to talk about healthy relationships, this is a piece of it.
Yes, I know sex is hard to talk about it easily because you get in people intimacy. But I think that sex, as I said at the beginning, sex and love cannot be dissociated. And if you love someone, you have to bring her, you know, something in bed. And she won't fall, you know, like, oh, I know what's going to happen tonight. So, you know.
Yeah.
And you need to bring excitement in your bedroom.
Was it always easy for you to talk about, if I call your family after this interview, and I might, Alice, I might do that. We'll see. Would they say, oh, yes, Alice, yes, she's always been able to talk about sex?
No, I don't talk about sex in my family.
Okay.
not at this point, no.
Now, I would imagine, though, that your lesbian friends love inviting you to the party because you bring the best gifts.
Yeah, they love it. Yeah, they always want to know what's new and what's going on and do you have any tips, and, you know, they love it. And they all say, bring some lube, we need it.
I'm having a housewarming party in a few weeks. I want to invite Alice Durock, the CEO and creator of Wet For Her, because you would make everybody so happy. Now, what is coming up for you? How are you going about developing new products?
So we have just launched a new product, which is called the Fusion. This means that the wearer of the harness can have sensation on her side while she's giving pleasure to her partner. It's now a two-way pleasure, which is a big step for the girl.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yes.
What tips would you give? Because you started a business, and you started a business, if I may say, at a relatively young age, which I love. What do you wish you had known before you started? What advice would you have given to yourself now?
The advice that I would give me is to be patient and not go too fast. The thing is, going fast costs a lot.
Okay.
Growing costs a lot. Some people think that when you grow, you have more cash flow, but when you grow, you need more stock. So you will spend your money on another site to grow. So that's the thing. So grow slowly, be patient. And I love one sentence. It's focus, which means follow one course until you succeed, in fact.
Lovely, lovely. And we should highlight, you know, not only are your products designed by lesbians and for lesbians, but you are very intentional in going out there and finding manufacturers who are also affiliated with the lesbian community.
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, the thing is, because on the website that you find on internet, there's just like so many harnesses. And at the end, we don't know who are the manufacturers. So, as we have a great website, I wanted also all the lesbian manufacturers, harness manufacturers like Spare Parts and Rodeo to be there. So then we can work as a community, you know, and show to the girls which brand you should buy and which brand are made by lesbians for lesbians.
Love it. I love it. Yeah. You're doing such a service. I'm so thrilled to talk about this just because this is one of those topics, and we've been doing this show for a long time, that we haven't gone near because we don't have someone wonderful like you to say, hey, I am dedicated to the lesbian community and I'm producing products for the lesbian community. But at the heart of everything that you're doing, Alice, you're creating more healthy relationships and you're creating conversation, which is huge.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you so much.
I love it. All right. Well, everyone needs to stroll on over to wetforher.us and don't just look at the products. So we want you to look at the products and we want you to buy everything. Alice is fine with you buying everything on that website. But also stroll on over to the About section and read about the intentionality of what Alice and all of her colleagues are doing. I would imagine you work with some great people.
Yeah. I have a great team now. I'm really, really happy.
This is
too cool. Also, sometimes you find the good people at the good place, you know. But today we're a great, great team.
I don't want people to think this is just Alice in some chateau just manufacturing things by herself. It's not. There's a whole team.
Yes.
There's a whole team.
We have the designer. We have the webmaster. We have testers. And we have a bunch of lesbians working for us, and this is terrific.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, I can't have you on the call without you saying something to our listening audience in French. Would you please tell them why they should listen to this show Is So Gay and that they should keep on listening?
Okay. Écoutez So Gay Radio.
Alice, you're doing such a great thing. We want you guys to keep on going, keep creating these great conversations and these quality products and focusing on customer satisfaction, because it's kind of alarming how many companies don't do that. So again, listeners, strolling over to wetforher.us. Merci, Alice. What an absolute pleasure.
Merci beaucoup, Ken.
All right, folks, and we are back. Just a reminder, you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. I'm actually recording this right now in a hotel room right outside of Chicago, which is why it sounds like I'm recording in a hotel room. Sorry about that. But we wanted to put this new episode out there because we had such fun guests for you. And there's so much news to cover. Becca is not here with me in Chicago. She's back at the house at 6110 Fir Avenue. So she will be back on the show next week. Loved getting your emails at ken@thisshowisogay.com about how much you liked Becca. I loved having Becca as well. We're setting up this whole sound studio there in the attic, so she will be back next week. Most excited about that. Had kind of an experience today that I wanted to share with all of you. So I'm at this conference, and it's an accreditation conference, and it's all the stuff that you don't necessarily care about, and so I'm not going to tell you about it, but the whole deal with the conference is there's hundreds and hundreds of college administrators. There are college presidents here and professors and administrators from all these different colleges all over the Midwest. And they put you in different groups because you have to do this case study. Don't worry about it. It's not that interesting. But in my group are folks from a ton of different faith-based schools. There's only six people in my group. And this one guy works for a school that I will not name, but I actually know for a fact that you cannot come out at this school, that if you do come out as gay at this school, that you will be ejected from this school. And our topic, our case study, is all about accreditation, and we're looking at this fictitious case study. And I find myself just sitting there staring at this guy and wanting to just call him out on, like, why do you work for this school that kicks out gay kids, which they do with some regularity. And every single time he speaks, I want to somehow connect it back to the fact that they kick out gay kids at his school. He'll say, well, I think in this fictitious scenario, they don't have their financials in order. And I sit there thinking, well, neither do you, because you kick out the gay kids. Doesn't matter what he says. All I can think about is how he kicks out the gay kids. How would you guys handle that? Would you say something? It's not the topic, but we're talking about integrity. A lot of accreditation is about, does a school live up to its integrity and to some national sense of integrity that we have for higher education? And this guy willingly and knowingly works for this school that I question their integrity. I have not said a word to him. So instead, I'm using my radio show to vent about him. now I'm going to get to the actual news. There's some fun stuff out there this week. There is some crazy, crazy stuff out there this week. David and Jason Benham, they are the brothers who had that planned property development TV show canceled because they expressed all of their far right-wing views. Well, they just spoke this week at the Rabidly Homophobic Family Research Council's annual Values Voter Summit. And this was just the other day. And they argued that they're basically the victims of a terrorist organization. They compared their situation to ISIS. The fact that they expressed some really radical gay views, they compared that to ISIS beheading folks. This is what they said, quote, "There is a radical agenda that has come in our nation. The weapon of choice for the agenda in the Middle East is a sword, but the weapon of choice for the agenda in America is silence. They demand silence." And by the way, the "they" would be the gay agenda. So at this point, we're just comparing ourselves to victims of terrorism if we put out rabidly anti-gay views and then we're called out on them. Crazy, crazy. Also at that Values Voter Summit, this comes to us from the Huffington Post, and I'm so sorry that Becca's not here for this story, because it's a classic. It's a classic baker story, and Becca's a baker. Anti-gay baker Melissa Klein, she cried at the Values Voter Summit last week over the closing of her business after she and her husband Aaron faced severe backlash from their refusal to make a cake for a lesbian couple's wedding. In January of 2013, Sweet Cakes by Melissa, located in Oregon, refused service to a lesbian couple looking for a wedding cake. The subsequent fallout included national media attention and a state investigation for anti-gay discrimination, which may be supported by the Kleins agreeing to bake cakes for an ex-gay group. The couple is now reportedly fighting a $150,000 lawsuit from the state, a reality that made Klein break into tears while discussing her passion for the process of baking wedding cakes during the Values Voter Summit. Following outrage over the business's anti-gay action, Sweet Cakes by Melissa eventually chose to shut down their storefront rather than serve gay clients. But the bakery is currently operating out of a home kitchen and is still taking orders online. This is what Becca and I were talking about last week, that these folks who, rather than make money off of the gay community, so rather than be entrepreneurs and obey the law, which has non-discrimination aspects built right into the law, they would rather shut down their business than make a cake for a lesbian couple. And then they get sympathy. They cry at the Values Voter Summit, and everyone, you should see all the comments on the story saying, "Oh, I can't believe the gays put you out of business." No, you put yourself out of business. This was a choice that you made. It wasn't the gays. This was a choice that you made. So there's that. More from these far-right groups. From theadvocate.com, three anti-gay groups have sent a joint letter to Republican leaders announcing their opposition to two gay Republican congressional candidates and a U.S. Senate candidate who supports marriage equality. The National Organization for Marriage, Family Research Council, and Citizen Link, which is an affiliate of the Focus on the Family, sent the letter late last week, and they denounced all of these different candidates. The letter read, quote, "They are wrong on critical foundational issues of importance to the American people. Worse, as occupants of high office, they will secure a platform in the media to advance their flawed ideology and serve as terrible role models for young people who will inevitably be encouraged to emulate them." The groups went on to say that they will, quote, "mount a concerted effort to urge voters to refuse to cast ballots for them in their November election." So even right there on the right, you got the far right not even liking their Republican counterparts because they're gay. So dissension even there. God, to be a gay Republican, it's got to be rough. Even people in your own party, they don't like you. They just don't. Facebook has apologized after meeting this week with drag queens, transgender people, and other LGBT and allied users concerned about Facebook's policy requiring users to be listed under their, quote, real name. An officer with the social networking giant has apologized for the policy and offered a clarification. This is from Chief Product Officer Chris Cox. He said this, quote, "I want to apologize to the affected community of drag queens, drag kings, transgender, and extensive community of our friends, neighbors, and members of the LGBT community for the hardship that we put you through in dealing with your Facebook accounts over the past few weeks. Our policy has never been to require everyone on Facebook to use their legal name. The spirit of our policy is that everyone on Facebook uses the authentic name they use in real life. For Sister Roma, that's Sister Roma. For Lil Miss Hot Mess, that's Lil Miss Hot Mess. part of what's been so difficult about this conversation is that we support both of these individuals and so many others affected by this completely and utterly in how they use Facebook. Cox went on to note that the issue around the site's real name policy arose after a single user reported hundreds of accounts as fraudulent. So they were trying, but then there was backlash. So they're trying to update the policy. They all took a picture there at Facebook with Facebook representatives, so they're going to figure it out. A statement from the Transgender Law Center said this, quote, "We had a very productive meeting with Facebook today in which they apologized for the way the situation has been handled, and they committed to making changes to the way they enforce their real names policy to ensure that folks who need to use chosen names that reflect their authentic selves online are able to do so. We are excited to work in good faith with Facebook to address all of the concerns raised in today's meeting. What was made clear today is that Facebook is ready to collaborate with our communities and shares our value of making sure everyone is able to safely be their authentic self online. We applaud the many staff at Facebook who advocated tirelessly for this progress." So Facebook's going to rectify this situation. We will keep our eyes on that. I know people are saying there's a mass exodus to Elo. I don't know that it really is a mass exodus. I know a few friends who are on it, and there was some other story that came out that said Elo is not doing some great things either, so I don't know. I don't know about all that. I'm staying on Facebook. It's just easier for me. If you're on Facebook, type in "This Show Is So Gay" and like our page. We like you, so you should like us. Marriage equality. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, in an interview with NBC News, said that the Justice Department will urge the Supreme Court to uphold state laws providing marriage equality. This is right after he announced that he was going to step down. He said, quote, "I can't imagine that we would take any other position while this president is in office, and certainly as long as I am attorney general or anyone who is my successor." So the Department of Justice is going to urge the Supreme Court to uphold state laws providing marriage equality. That is definitely a good thing. Now it's all about seeing what is the Supreme Court going to do. They met earlier this week to consider petitions for cases to be heard during their upcoming session. The court is expected to take up at least one case involving marriage equality in the session, which begins on October 6th. Observers say the court will likely announce its agenda in the next several weeks. It's coming down to it. It's coming down to it, folks. More stories from the LGBT Smart Briefs, and again, I urge you to subscribe to them. The United Nations Human Rights Council last week approved a resolution that addresses anti-LGBT violence and discrimination, including by urging a UN report on LGBT human rights violations. The U.S. and dozens of countries supported the resolution, which was formally proposed by Brazil, Uruguay, Chile, and Colombia. So it's exciting that they have this resolution. I still get a little bit confused how much power the UN really has. They try to step in, but I'm not sure how much effect they have. I'm not sure. I don't know. Hey, a story that we neglected to cover last week. I was so excited to have a new co-host. We left some stuff out. So we want to give just an incredible, huge shout out to Allison Bechdel and Mary Bonato, who were among the 21 winners of this year's John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Fellowships. Those are those genius grants. They were announced on September 17th. Bechdel is an award-winning cartoonist and graphic memoirist whose comic strip Dykes to Watch Out For ran from 1983 to 2008. Gosh, that's a long time. It was beloved not only by lesbians, but anyone with a sense of humor and a heartbeat. Her memoirs, Funhouse, a family tragicomic, and Are You My Mother, a comic drama, are just the most incredible, brilliant, witty reads. So you should definitely go check them out. Mary Bonato is the Civil Rights Project Director of the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders. She is one of the foremost leaders of the marriage equality movement in this country. Her work was critical to the 2003 landmark court decision that legalized gay marriage in Massachusetts, which was, of course, the first state in the country to permit same-sex marriage. Mary's legal work was crucial to the federal court challenges that paved the way to the Supreme Court striking down the Defense of Marriage Act last summer. So huge congratulations to the two of them. Johanna, I told you I would fit it in the show. Shout out to our Northampton friends. Love them over there. A story that you wouldn't have heard about, but it's such a big deal, and I love covering these stories like this. California officials in charge of completing death certificates will be responsible now for ensuring that the documents reflect individuals' expressed gender identities under legislation that was recently signed by Governor Jerry Brown. The bill was authored by out California Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins. This is such a big deal. This is dignity up until the end. And it's one of those things that when we talk about trans identity, oh, are we just talking about bathrooms? No, we're not just talking about bathrooms. We're talking about dignity from start to finish. And although it sounds a little morbid to say this is the finish, but it is, because the family lives on and this individual's legacy lives on, and they sure as heck should have documents that reflect that individual's expressed gender identity. So kudos to Governor Jerry Brown. Kudos to California Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins, a really important bill out there. Beyond the borders of the United States, several hundred gay activists marched last week through Serbia under the protection of riot police and armored vehicles. No large-scale violence, although a very few small fights were reported. Michael Davenport, a European Union official, said the rally sent a, quote, very positive and strong message. I love it. I love it. On the other side of the equation, and if you don't think these things still happen, oh my gosh, are you wrong. The Minnesota Star Tribune, which is the most widely read newspaper in Minnesota, has been widely criticized by users of social media for publishing a full-page advert last Sunday that many readers considered to be anti-transgender. The full-page advert was placed by the Minnesota Child Protection League. The advert encourages parents to contact Minnesota State High School League officials and ask them to oppose a transgender student policy. The advert, which many feel plays on trans bigotry and prejudice, depicts the tiled wall of a changing room shower facility. Written over the image, and I'm looking at it right now, it says, quote, a male wants to shower beside your 14-year-old daughter. Are you okay with that? So the Minnesota State High School League is currently considering a proposal to allow transgender students to be allowed to participate in high school sports. It would mean that female-to-male transgender students who have started hormone treatment can only play on male teams. Male-to-female students who haven't started hormone treatment will be allowed to play on either team, while male-to-female students would need to provide evidence of testosterone suppression therapy to play on female teams. This is a disgusting advertisement. This is fear-mongering. It's fear-mongering. I was going to say of the worst degree. There aren't degrees of fear-mongering. This is fear-mongering, and it's just, of course it's playing on trans bigotry. It's terrible. It's terrible. So write letters there to the Minnesota Star Tribune and ask them to not run ads like this. Ridiculous. Finally, good news on television. Television has increased its depiction of gay, lesbian, and bisexual characters, with the edge going to cable and the internet over broadcast networks, according to a study released this week by the advocacy group GLAAD. Networks are promoting the understanding of gay lives with some of the most inclusive programs yet, but should, quote, strive to include significant transgender content, says Sarah Kate Ellis, president and CEO of GLAAD, which advocates for the inclusion of LGBT characters and stories in the media. Transgender characters are featured on cable and the internet fare, such as the online series Orange is the New Black, which I've never seen. It's on Netflix. And Transparent, which is on Amazon Prime, which I heard is amazing. I heard it's amazing. In the 2014-2015 season, the study by GLAAD said that 3.9% of 813 characters regularly seen on primetime network scripted series will be lesbian, gay, or bisexual, a total of 32 characters. That represents an increase over last year's 3.3%, but it is down from the 4.4% record high for LGBT depictions on network series in 2012. Among the networks, Fox again emerged with the highest percentage of lesbian, gay, or bisexual regular characters, 6.5%, with Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Glee among the programs contributing to the tally. ABC, which had tied Fox for first last year at 5.4%, dropped to 4.5%. So it's up. It's not up by a lot, but it's up by some. So there's that. That's a good thing, right? So, of course, write to your networks and support these shows that feature gay characters. It's really important. That's what keeps gay characters on TV. Hopefully the shows are also good, because that makes us feel even better. But let's try to support as much out LGBT content as we can. That is it for this week's show from a hotel somewhere near Chicago. Not in Chicago, but right outside Chicago. That's it for me and this week's show. Huge, huge thanks to State Senator Marco Elias out there in Washington. Go look up his campaign. Support him if you can. And, of course, to Alice Duroc, and she's doing some great things in France, supporting the lesbian community and all of their needs. You guys, get out there. Go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference in this world for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
There's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. There's a black hat caught in the high tree top. There's a little